Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is CDC Laboratory Update, CLIA Regulations, Resources for Clinical Laboratories, and More. The presenter is Reynold Salerno, Ph.D., Director, Division of Laboratory Systems, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Atlanta, Georgia.
Since I don't run a laboratory day to day, I'm not clued in to all of the nuanced implications of the LDT rule, of the use of Z-codes by private payers, and any reforms to CLIA. So I've asked Dr. Bill Maurice, CEO at Mayo Clinic Labs, to be the chair and moderator of the rest of our general session. Come on up, Bill. And you'll find him to be articulate, entertaining, quite the bon vivant from the podium. And he will introduce our first speaker, which is going to be Reynold Salerno from the CDC, and he'll guide us for the rest of the morning. So have at it.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. It's such a pleasure to be involved.
We have an agenda here.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. To be back at the Executive War College, always a fantastic meeting, always learn a lot, always make a lot of good connections, and always hear a lot of discussion about active issues in our industry. As Robert pointed out, and as Lila pointed out, there's a lot of active issues in our industry right now. And luckily for all of you, we have great speakers to really go deep on some of these issues. And then we have a lot of time dedicated at the end for a panel discussion, which I'm sure will be quite rich and vibrant. And hopefully you'll submit your questions on the WOVA app for that. I want to be user-friendly, you know, and we're laboratorians, so pattern recognition, so I actually wore the same suit that was in my picture on the WOVA app, so I'm easier to find in the crowd, not that I'm that hard to begin with anyway. So, but on to the speakers. So I'd like to call up our first speaker, Dr. Salerno, who has a lot of titles at CDC. His bio is in the WOVA app as well. Acting Associate Director for Laboratory and Science at CDC, in addition to his permanent position. So, Ren, look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Thanks, Robert. It's great to be back at Executive War College. It's awesome that this meeting continues to grow, which doesn't surprise me at all. So I have a very short amount of time to try to cover a small amount of material, but appreciate the opportunity to be here. Bill mentioned that. Just so real quickly, a few things about CDC since last time I was here last year. We have a new director who started last summer, Dr. Mandy Cohen. These are her priorities that she's articulated since she's been at CDC. So a real focus at the agency on readiness for future responses, improving mental health, including fighting addictions, supporting young families, particularly maternal health, and reducing infant mortality. And then in addition, an initiative that Dr. Walensky, our prior director, had started during the pandemic, which was to try to help evolve the agency in response to the pandemic, bring the agency closer together as a single agency rather than separate silos. If you've heard Dr. Cohen on the press at all recently, she's continually using this phrase "one CDC" that we're all trying to embrace. One of the great things that Dr. Cohen has also emphasized since her time started last year at CDC, which I really appreciate, is that she articulates a number of things, particularly workforce data, but also laboratories as core public health infrastructure. And this is new language for CDC, something I wanted to emphasize here, that I think the agency, as a result of COVID and many other things, has recognized explicitly the importance of laboratory. Sorry, I think we skipped a slide. No, maybe we didn't. We skipped it. Somehow I lost the slide. Anyway, that laboratories are fundamental to public health, and that especially when we think about response, the clinical laboratory sector is the front lines, is where we initially identify what is happening and enables our entire public health response. And she's also embraced this idea that laboratory systems are how we think about core laboratory infrastructure for public health. And when we say laboratory systems, we mean these cross-cutting components which are universal to clinical laboratory medicine, whether you're a hospital laboratory or a public health laboratory or a point-of-care laboratory. And those are the importance of laboratory quality, laboratory safety, laboratory informatics, training and workforce development, as well as readiness for future responses. And so at CDC now, we've articulated these priorities for our programs: obviously high-quality laboratory science, reliable laboratory diagnostics and informatics for outbreaks, but also importantly, and our new director is very supportive of this, extensive engagement, not only with the public health sector, but also the private sector partners in laboratory medicine. Speaking of partners, there are a few examples I just wanted to point out to you to ensure that you are aware of, and also help show, hopefully, the agency's evolution in this area. I'm talking about the Laboratory Response Network, MOU that we've had for a number of years, and then I will jump into some of our work within the CLIA program. The Laboratory Response Network, I hope you've heard about. It's been around for more than 20 years. It really came into its own, particularly after 9/11. It's always had a counterterrorism bent to it. Most of the tests that are deployed within the Laboratory Response Network were tests designed for the agents that we thought might, back 20 years ago, might be most likely to be used in a bioterrorism or chemical terrorism event. These are public health laboratories, both within the states as well as within the Department of Defense, FBI laboratories, some international laboratories, and some veterinary laboratories as well. And they really are the foundation for how traditionally public health has enacted a laboratory response to a public health outbreak. But because of its historical focus on agents that were likely to be used in terrorism, obviously it doesn't have the kind of coverage that we now expect for larger naturally occurring infectious disease outbreaks. And we saw the struggles that this network had, for instance, during COVID, especially during the Mpox response in 2022. And we are well understand now that as important as this network is for our counterterrorism preparedness, it's not adequate for our preparedness for naturally occurring infectious diseases. You know, we recognized that back in 2016 during the Zika outbreak when we first needed to request support from the commercial laboratory community for diagnostic testing. In 2018, we created an MOU with APHL, ACLA, and CDC and CSTE. That MOU was really helpful for us and allowed us to provide a lot of information to the commercial laboratory sector very early in January and February of 2020 to help those entities bring up LDTs in response to the COVID pandemic. But it wasn't good enough. And so what we've done last year, we expanded this MOU group. All these organizations that you see pictured here now are part of our MOU for surge testing capacity during public health emergencies. We meet with these organizations regularly. We listen as much as we can, and we're trying to actively take steps to better incorporate the views and the expertise of the private sector into the way we think about public health preparedness. Okay, now I'm going to jump to some, very quickly, to some CLIA updates. Among the many things that I try to do at CDC, I'm also the designated federal officer of CLIAC. Hopefully all of you know that CLIAC is the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Advisory Committee. It's the only federal advisory committee for laboratory medicine. And there are a number of CLIAC, both current and former members here at this conference this week. I want to thank all of you who have been or currently are members of CLIAC. It's extremely valuable contribution that you make to clinical laboratory medicine on behalf of the federal government, so thank you for that. There are 20 members of CLIAC. They serve for 2 years. They come from a variety of laboratory specialties and disciplines and roles, and they've contributed significantly. So the other thing that you should know very quickly, all of the CLIAC proceedings, all the CLIAC recommendations, all the CLIAC agendas are public. They are on the public website, and we invite you to go there. We keep track of all of our recommendations. The recommendations have made significant impacts. We note on our website exactly the steps that the government has taken as a result of those recommendations. We have ongoing work groups. Right now, two work groups, the biosafety work group as well as the next generation sequencing work group, are quite active, and our next meeting is in November. So just real quickly, a couple of areas I know of interest for the community where CLIAC, I believe, is making a significant impact, specifically in digital pathology and remote review. Hopefully you all know that last year in May, CMS put out a memo that said almost all of their enforcement discretions that they used during the pandemic had come to an end. However, they did indicate that they would continue to exercise enforcement discretion to permit pathologists and other laboratory personnel and professionals to remotely review digital laboratory data, digital results, and digital images, so-called digital materials, without obtaining a separate CLIA certificate for the remote testing site, provided that the designated primary site or home base had such a certificate and the work being performed at the remote testing site falls within the specialties and subspecialties of that primary site certificate. Importantly, CLIAC had a work group called the Regulation Assessments Work Group that looked at a broad swath of issues around the CLIA regulations, and this was one of the areas that work group focused on. In case you're in this, that work group, by the way, was really substantive, and they presented reports both to CLIAC in April and November 2022, April 23, and then their final report was presented last November of 2023. But on this specific issue, CLIAC made several recommendations. One was that the CLIA regulation should be revised to allow remote analysis for any CLIA specialty or subspecialty. If a laboratory employee works out of their home or at another remote location performing data duties such as data analysis and interpretation associated with that laboratory, then those activities would be covered through an extension of the laboratory's CLIA certificate and do not require disclosure of the address of that remote location. A laboratory's CLIA certificate should cover the qualified laboratory personnel when they use a secure connection authorized and or managed by that laboratory to remotely review and report data for test processing. So it's important to note that these are only recommendations that CLIAC has made to the federal government and that CMS in particular, but also with CDC, are now actively considering those recommendations and potentially issuing changes to CLIA. And then the last piece, I know I'm short on time, is the issue of data as a specimen. Again, this CLIAC regulation assessment work group focused extensively on this. I think hopefully you all know that data as a specimen is not considered a specimen under the current CLIA regulations. In November 2022, CLIAC recommended that the term materials derived from the human body, as stated in the CLIA regs, should be defined in CLIA as the patient specimen. So this would include data derived from a human specimen, such as images, genetic and protein sequences, omics data, and other data that if used for the purpose of providing information for the diagnosis, prevention, or treatment of any disease or impairment of, or the assessment of the health of human beings. In April of 2023, last year, CLIAC also recommended a new standard related to data analysis be added to subpart K to encompass all data types that can be manipulated to generate a final laboratory test result. Again, as with all CLIAC recommendations related to revising the CLIA regulations, CDC is working with CMS to determine the best path forward. But I do think that these are two areas, data as a specimen and remote review, where CLIAC has made a significant impact on future CLIA regulations. So I think that's it for me, trying to keep it short. Thanks so much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you, Dr. Salerno. I think there is a question so for you, and I do know that all these are really important. It's amazing we come through COVID, and it seems like it's still a challenge to really keep the focus on making sure we're prepared for the next outbreak, and I really appreciate your partnership with that. And, of course, all the CLIAC topics are vitally important for us as well. The questions are actually, there's two, but they're interrelated, and they're actually on workforce. And it's basically, with the extreme labor shortage, why do you think attempts to broaden the testing personnel pool with more relaxed qualifications continues to fall short? And couldn't the risk of less strict testing personnel qualifications be negated by a robust competency program within individual laboratories? So just a couple questions around workforce for you.
Yeah, I did see those questions earlier. I think it's a great point, and I know CLIAC has talked about this a lot. I think there are different views of this, I think I should say the government has struggled with, as many of you know, who are familiar with the personnel regulations within CLIA, of what requirements to put into the regulations to ensure that we have highly qualified personnel who are performing these regulated tests and providing results back to patients and providers. I think there are lots of options. We rely heavily on our laboratories and our customers, so to speak, to provide and ensure adequate trained personnel. And we have thought a lot, or I should say that the government has thought a lot about how those personnel requirements could be loosened. But we would, we don't want to give the impression that we're not expecting highly qualified personnel to be performing these tests. And that we've had lots of examples where, especially during COVID, where a lot of organizations allowed people with very little, if any, training to perform testing. And we saw some real failures in the quality of laboratory testing as a result. So it's a delicate balance, but it is something that we're actively thinking about.
Excellent.
Thank you
so much, sir.
Thanks, Bill.
And I bring back to the podium Robert Michel.
Thank you, Bill. We're ready to go to break, and I just have a couple of announcements for you. Let's thank our sponsor, the Hamamatsu, bought you breakfast this morning. And last night's Get Acquainted reception, our sponsor was Creelio Health. And your break that you're about to go off to is by the Dark Report. So let's reconvene back here in 20 minutes, and we'll take a cut at molecular diagnostics, Z-codes, followed by the FDA LDT rule. And thank you, Dr. Maurice. Bye-bye.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.